Welcome back to the Roundtable. We are at the Mount, Edith Wharton's home in Lenox, Massachusetts. This past Saturday night, the Edith Wharton 150th birthday celebration for the Mount in Lenox took place in Boston, where the Mount's 2012 Lifetime Achievement Award was given to actor, novelist, film director, screenwriter, and Downton Abbey creator Julian Fellowes. Fellowes' many accomplishments include turns on the stage and screen, two best-selling novels, and distinction as one of today's leading screenwriters, producers, and directors. His first script for Gosford Park won Fellowes the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay and launched his screenwriting career, which includes Vanity Fair and The Young Victoria. He also penned the script for the stage production of Mary Poppins, still running on Broadway. Fellowes' smash hit television series Downton Abbey premiered in 2010, and the third season will begin on PBS on January 6th. The series won 6 Emmys its first year, nominated for 16 for its second season. Fellowes visited the Mount on Friday, which is where we caught up with him to discuss his work, his career, and Edith Wharton as a muse. Julian Fellowes, what a great pleasure to have tea with you here in the drawing room at the Mount. A great pleasure.
No, it seems very fitting, doesn't it? I must say, I'm loving this, actually. I'm loving the house and its position and everything. It's, you know, the great trick of life is to be undisappointing. And I think the Mount is very undisappointing.
You have said, in talking about Highclere Castle, where Downton Abbey is filmed, that it's very much a character in the show. And when you come to a place like this, does it remind you of how important a place is to a story that is being told?
I certainly think that pretty well every building where people live has a character that is quite distinct. And when you are making a drama, I mean, particularly obviously when I'm doing sort of country house drama, that kind of thing, you are looking for a house that is suited to play the part that you have given it. And every house requires something different. But this has, to me, a very, very distinct quality. You can absolutely see from this house part of who she was. I mean, I'm staying at Blantyre, which is an absolutely lovely house from precisely the same period, but with a totally different character and a totally different viewpoint. That is very American in its concept and very much to do with the Gilded Age and so on. Whereas this, you can see her kind of European sympathies and her interest in France and her interest in Italy and everything else, all of which is expressed in this wonderfully kind of mellifluous house. And, you know, that is telling you not so much about buildings as about her. So that's where it's useful to any kind of dramatist or narrator to remember that houses where you set your story will play a part in it.
It has been said that the custom of the country was one of the influences for Downton Abbey, of course, written by Edith Wharton, a portion of that book written here at the Mount. Is it curious to you the background of a story, of something that has inspired you? Do you like to hear that backstory?
Yes, I'm always interested in how these things come to be. I mean, for me, Edith Wharton's writing is informed by her own sadness. I think it's absolutely no coincidence that her great writing comes out after the years of her tremendous unhappiness and disappointment in her own marriage. Before that, she was intellectual, she was a very clever woman, and you know, and she had all these different interests. But there is a kind of base note of sorrow in her writing that is completely authentic and one feels must be firsthand. And that kind of informs it. She has a sort of mercy and for her characters and pity. I mean, Custom of the Country is a classic case where she is critical. She's critical of the world she's writing about, which, of course, she knows. That's the other thing that is so mesmeric about her writing. And she's critical of her own anti-heroine. I mean, Undine Spragg is a kind of Becky Sharp in that she certainly is not flawless. She's filled with flaws. But at the same time, Wharton places herself so that she is sort of sorry for her. She wants her triumph, even if she disapproves of it. And all that kind of very complicated moral position, I think, you know, makes for a very interesting read. And I would love to think that my work had been influenced by Edith Wharton. So I would take that as nothing but a compliment.
You have stated that as far as novelists go, that Anthony Trollope and Edith Wharton are right up there for great influences and work that you admire.
Yes, absolutely. Trollope is my favorite English writer, no question. And Edith Wharton, my favorite American. In fact, they're probably the two novelists I admire most. But again, I think it's because they have a kind of kindness. You know, even when they're describing a villain, he's never, or she's never, completely black-hearted. There's always a kind of reason for them to be as they are. And I can't really find the suffering in Trollope's life, except in his youth. He had a very difficult childhood because his father was a sort of failure and the family ran out of money, and his mother, rather interestingly actually, had to make their living, and she came to America and blah blah blah. So all of that did happen, but his actual adult life was fairly uncomplicated, whereas Wharton was the other way around. She had a kind of completely luxurious upbringing. She grew up in that very high society world in New York and so on. And I think probably married a man of her own kind of background who was nice looking, and at the time thought, well, that's that. But of course, that wasn't that. And he turned out to be ill and increasingly ill mentally, and the whole thing went wrong for her. And I think that was what gave her understanding of those who are less fortunate, that she herself was to be pitied. The other thing I think is very interesting about her life, reflected in her work, she knew about concealment. She knew about putting on an act and going into society and quite deliberately presenting a situation as true when it was not true. And that informs the way she criticizes her own world, that she knows about the falseness. She knows about the concept of the facade that must be maintained against all odds and all the rest of it. And she also pities the people who are maintaining the facade. And she understands that behind it, there may be a great deal of suffering, because in her case, there was. And all of that, I think, makes her a tremendously interesting and a tremendously modern writer, actually. Her books are enormously readable for us, whereas there are contemporaries of hers, naming no names, who are much harder for us to read. And, I think she now has a popularity that she absolutely deserves.
There is an accessibility, isn't there, to her work?
Oh, yes. No, she's tremendously accessible. And she describes people one knows. You know, she is very truthful in the emotional narrative behind her stories. And, you know, we have no difficulty in identifying people who are facing similar problems in a modern context.
When you were talking a moment ago about looking at even having a sympathetic trait to a villain, we see that in your work as well.
Well, I certainly hope so. I also feel that, people don't wake up in the morning and think how nasty they can be. You know, everyone has a kind of reason for doing what they do. And you have to remember that. You have to allow, an obvious example is Thomas, the footman in Downton, who in a way is very scheming and very, ungenerous and so on. But you also have to remember, he's gay. He's gay at a time when it was a criminal offence. He couldn't have an emotional life without taking his life in his hands every time. And if someone wanted to make trouble for him, he could have wound up in prison. And I think a lot of the young particularly, they don't know that. They don't realise that just a short time ago, it was only changed in England in the 1960s, just a short time ago, two adult people wanting an emotional life from a completely informed position could end up in jail. And, you know, that's so extraordinarily unjust to our way of thinking and to our generation. And that, for me, makes Thomas kind of sympathetic, because you realize why he's defensive and why he suspects hostility and why he doesn't regard people as automatically being his friends, because he's known that. He's been up against it all his life. And, you know, so that's the other side of Thomas, which to me makes him kind of sympathetic. I mean, it doesn't mean he isn't also unkind and everything else, but you understand why. And, you know, I hope I do that with most characters. I don't think I've given O'Brien much of an excuse, but we've sort of touched on it. And she has that moment in the first scene, you know, when she says, Sarah O'Brien, this is not who you are, where you realise she is aware of her own nastiness. But, you know, for the most part, I think people, when they are nice, I mean, I sound like Pollyanna, but, you know, I think when they are unpleasant or nasty or hostile or whatever, there's a reason there somewhere. And my job is to try and suggest it.
I've heard you describe your working relationship with Maggie Smith and mention that one of the reasons that it works is that the two of you can work in an environment and not become overly emotionally involved and then move on to the next thing, be very serious about the work and not be attached later. And I wonder about how that influences what you write and how you look at these various periods that you write about.
Yes, I mean, I love working with Maggie, actually. I really enjoy it. I've done three things with her now, two films and Downton, which, of course, is kind of many things in one. I very much enjoy her understanding of the parts I write. You never have to explain anything. She always understands why it's funny and or whatever it is. And she has this marvelous, dry, unsentimental acting. She can convey great feeling. I mean, she can make you cry. But it's not sentimental. It's not sort of saccharine. And I do enjoy that. But you're right. It is the work, really. That's what we share. You know, we don't sit endlessly tearing a pheasant and reminiscing about Christmas 100 years ago. I know I feel how to write a certain kind of thing for her. I mean, of course, she has a much broader range than that, but nevertheless. And she knows how to play what I write. And I think I do enjoy that. I like working with people when it's about the work, you know, as opposed to it all being a kind of love-in. There are lots of actors, actually, in this series where I really admire what they do with what I've written. They add a whole layer to it that makes it more interesting than it was when I finished it. And, you know, that's, in a sense, why you're very reliant on getting good actors, because good actors will put a layer into it that wasn't there before. And they will suggest undercurrents and emotional thingamies and all the rest of it, and just make it very rich. And I think we are incredibly lucky in the cast we've assembled.
Given that the third season will start in January, have you come to a full understanding as to why it has become such a success and something so important to television viewers and so beloved, not only in England, but in the US as well?
I mean, the short answer to that question is no. Because if I really understood why this whole phenomenon has happened, I would happily spend the rest of my life writing series that were enormous phenomena. But I'm sure that won't be the case. I mean, obviously, in some way, we hit the right note for the present zeitgeist. I mean, I think the fact that this is an insecure period for a great many men and women, and a lot of people are worried financially, and this is a difficult period in the economies all over the world. And maybe there is something in looking at a period that seems more secure and ordered than our own, that is a kind of comfort zone. Of course, it's an illusion, in that, in fact, the period we're dealing with was one of tremendous social change, and the rules were changing, things for women were changing, the rules of employment were changing, unionization, all sorts of stuff was altering. So it wasn't really secure and ordered at all, really, but it had that kind of shop window of order. But, I mean, I have no other answer to that. I you know, I'm absolutely delighted that it has found a place in people's hearts. And, you know, long may it reign.
Season 3 of Downton Abbey will premiere on PBS on January 6th. And again, congratulations on receiving the Mounts 2012 Lifetime Achievement Award. A great pleasure to spend time with you today. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. It's been very nice to be here.
Gillian Fellows is the creator of Downton Abbey, which will see its third season premiere on PBS on January 6th. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.